come, all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant.
I'm Demelo Roberts, stage and studio on Arts Watch. On location today at Portland Playhouse. You're listening to some music from A Christmas Carol at Portland Playhouse running through December 31st. Take a listen. Talk about this adaptation of A Christmas Carol by Rick Lombardo and Anna Lakoff is director Charles Grant. Hello, Charles.
Hi, Dume.
It's so good to see you.
Good to see you, too. I'm glad to be here.
And actor Letevin Alexander, who's playing Scrooge. Letevin, I haven't seen you in a long, long time.
It's been a long time. A lot has changed since last time and now.
A lot has changed, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So it's great to be here today. Welcome both to stage and studio on Arts Watch. Now, Charles, I had a chance to see, I think the show was last year, I believe, a year ago. And I believe I told you that at the time, it was the most innovative and fresh version of A Christmas Carol that I, in all my years, have ever witnessed. It was like attending a celebration. It had such joy and creativity, and it was just such a novel approach to A Christmas Carol. I have to ask you, is this year's production kind of the same, or what are you doing?
It's a little bit of both, so I feel so honored and blessed. This is my third year directing A Christmas Carol at the Portland Playhouse, and it's always that beautiful balance of creating a show that people know and love. We've been doing A Christmas Carol for, I believe this is the 12th year at Portland Playhouse. So a lot of the community has come to know it and love it, and some people make it a tradition. I've even talked to some people who have seen every single version of it, while also being able to be responsive to the moment and the new cast members that come in. Particularly this year, we have a new Scrooge. So I always say that, you know, I'm a collaborative director, period. I'm a collaborative artist. Whether I'm acting or directing or writing, whatever it is, it's really for me about the people who are around me. It's what I love about theater, is doing it together. And so I was very excited that through our audition process, Letevin came in and he did an amazing job and sort of had done things that I had not seen before and made me hear the play in a new way. So that really excited me. So having a new Scrooge, and particularly someone like Letevin, just has been such a gift. And in a play that is following the journey of this man, it is such a gift to find all the ways that we're going to make this new together. And we have been making it new together. So there's definitely some surprises that I don't want to give away, but I've been thinking a lot about Scrooge's journey and like being visited by these three ghosts and just the stakes that raise with each visit he gets. And so by the time we get to, you know, his final moments, I think we've got some very exciting things that we've never been able to see in this production, let alone maybe in a Playhouse production, period.
Now, for some reason, Letevin, I've seen a picture of you as Scrooge. Are you a new Scrooge? Or are you new to Portland Playhouse playing Scrooge?
That was AI. If it was me as Scrooge, that was definitely AI. In the past, I've been Bob Cratchit. And in the last time, I played Bob Cratchit twice, in 2021 and 2022. And in 2022 is when I understudied Scrooge, played by Cecily Ash, and I got to go on once as Cecily. But I don't think there's any pictures to commemorate that. Oh, there is a picture. Oh, gosh. Well, there is a picture, so that's not AI. But yes, I did do one understudy performance as Scrooge, but this is my first time playing him proper.
And somebody took a picture of that because I got one. Yeah. So that's awesome because one of the things, I'm going to get back to more about what you're doing with the concept, but since we're on the topic of Scrooge, you seem a bit young to me to play Scrooge. So tell me about that.
Well, here's what I think. I think that as much as I am young in age, as far as, you know, numerical age, what draws me to Scrooge is that it's not that he's necessarily old, is that he's locked in his ways. And I'm 34 years old, and I'm at the age where people can get locked into who they are and where they are. And there's many wealthy 34-year-olds walking around right now who will not give their money for anything. And I've been in situations in my young life where I've seen people my age or younger who've been in life-threatening situations or have been in things that have made them really consider their life. and change their life, like in a very foundational way. And so I'm approaching Scrooge from that standpoint of a young Black man who has worked hard in his life to get to where he is, but that has become a double-edged sword of, I have this hard work ethic, but I have kind of lost my soul along the way. And so in that way, it doesn't necessarily matter about the age, but just more about the intentionality and how you've become lost in life, spiritually and in some ways kind of morally.
That's beautifully put. I mean, it makes you think about it because you have seen a lot of life. I mean, you're a dad now, you know, so you have seen some life.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. And seeing that my life, that one thing that Charles talks about in this production, where no matter what you believe, you know, whether you believe in Christianity, Judaism, you're Buddhist, whatever it may be, this story is about believing in something bigger than you. So whether you're atheist or not, my life now as a father is bigger than me. Every decision I make now doesn't just affect me, doesn't just affect my mom and my brother. It affects these two people that I help bring into the world. And if I forego that, if I forsake that, that then is a consequence onto me spiritually and morally and mentally. So, yes, this is about things that are bigger than ourselves. And being a father, I definitely feel that now. I definitely feel that.
Many of your years, you feel them.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'm only 4 years into being a dad now, but I'm just like, oh, gosh. every day, it gets bigger and bigger. You know, it gets more worthwhile, but it's just that much more weight, that much more responsibility onto me.
Wow. All right. So in hearing LeTevin talk about the years as far as, you know, his growth and what he's bringing into Scrooge, is that why, you know, what moved you to cast him as Scrooge?
Oh, totally. I mean, I'm always looking for, well, number one, it's rare to get to return to a project, period. So I directed it for the first year, and I think there was a lot of learning and a lot of growth for me as an artist, as a person. It was my first time directing something by myself. So there was a lot of pressure, but also a lot of excitement. And I think the second time around, a lot of the cast had returned and I was learning to trust my vision more and really lean into that and know that I have something to say and contribute to this story and to this piece and the legacy of this story. And so now approaching year three, very excited to have a new Scrooge. And as I think about the things that I'm coming towards it, I know that I need a lot of joy right now. I need a lot of connection. And in my own life, I've been thinking a lot about my career goals, my family, my relationships, and like the juggle that always is. And so LeTevin and I talked a lot about this, even in auditions, and we've continued to talk about it. But the ways that like we're trying to tell a story and create a Scrooge, manifest this human that all of us can look at and in some ways relate to. Because I think on one end, it can be like, well, I'm not a Scrooge. Like, that's not me. Like, I can just sit and observe this. But to really find the humanity in it, and really to hear the words. And so starting with auditions and being able to really explore, well, who is this person? And what if he was closer to who we are? And how did he get here, right? And what has he given up? And his capacity for change, that's something that I've also been thinking about in this moment, that like no matter how far gone we are, no matter what is going on in the world around us or in our lives with our own traumas or histories or triggers, all of those things, there's always the possibility for change and the ripple effect of community. I think the production we're creating is speaking to that. And the ways that like, no matter how hardened Scrooge has become, there is this whole community of family and strangers and spirits alike of all ages who are saying, I see you. I see you and I'm not going to give up on you. And I think that's what I'm really resonating with in this moment of what is it for us to not give up on each other and not give up on ourselves and joy as being radical, togetherness as being radical, and how we can practice that.
Well, that's what I was curious about too, is how you keep it fresh, and you've explained that. But I'm wondering, does the script support that? I mean, does it, because when I remember seeing it last year, everybody was in the room together on stage. It wasn't like, and now I present this character, and now here's this character, and here's a couple characters, and then we have a group scene. No, it wasn't that at all.
Yeah, the script definitely supports that. And this production was brought to us by Christy Miles over a decade ago. And so that's number one, embedded in the production. But we've also been in conversation with Rick Lombardo and Anna Lacaff throughout the years. In fact, we talked to them this summer because we have new actors who play new instruments that we've never had in the show before. And they were super supportive of that. And so it's really a gift to still be in conversation and connection with the writers and creators of this show. And it's so important. Number one, I'm an artist who really loves bringing an audience along on a journey and immersive theater, if you will, which I know that can mean all sorts of things. But with this production in particular, the audience really is that final character. And we learn so much with that first dress rehearsal or first preview. Again, for the purposes of like staging it, and there's direct address and entering through the aisles. And so that the audience really is a part of whether or not Scrooge is going to change, or whether or not he is going to make a decision to see each other. And so I also love the seating of this production, right? Audience on both sides, that we're always reminded of, it's not just what's happening on stage, but it's all around us. And we all have the capacity to be a part of, just with one action, with one breath together, saying, I see you, I hear you, I'm just gonna hold space with you, to really make a difference. So it's really a gift to have this script in particular, when there are so many versions of A Christmas Carol out there that we could choose from.
Have you ever had any pushback? I know this is your third year, so maybe there hasn't been, but about it not being the traditional Victorian Charles Dickens, you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. There were a few years ago, this was before I was directing it, but maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. So there's also a lot of like play with gender. So people of all genders play all sorts of characters. And we've had some audience members in the past whose feathers got a little ruffled by that. And we sort of take that in stride and try to hold space to hear those. But we don't necessarily want to change that or be impacted by that. Because I think it's really important for all of these characters and for all of us to see ourselves represented on stage in many different ways. And so, you know, for the past couple of years, Fred was played by Claire Rigsby. And so we talked a lot about that. Like, what was it like for two, you know, female-bodied, for these women to play, you know, Fred and Elizabeth? And what did that mean for them to start a family? And what does that mean for, like, Fred's relationship with Scrooge? And so I think that's something that I embrace, because I believe we all can play sort of really anything. And then the other layer to that is we also have had some pre-show programming in the past. Last year for closing, we had a pre-show with a drag performer. And so that also ruffled some feathers, even though in the show we had DJ Curtis playing Ghost of Christmas Present at that time. So there's definitely some pushback, but I would say what outweighs the pushback is all the people that I've talked to who say, I've never seen A Christmas Carol like that. I've never seen myself represented. That getting to see Tiny Tim, all three of our Tiny Tims are these young, amazingly talented Black young actors. And so for me, that outweighs all of the sort of critique, if you will. And I also think, like, critique is not a bad thing. If you are having this response, that means we touch something deep in you. Something is starting to rustle and shake and rumble. And so I don't shy away from that. In the same way that we're doing that with Scrooge, I think if we're doing our jobs, we're doing that with the audience as well.
We have a budding Tiny Tim over here, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Mackenzie. LeTevin, would you introduce our special guest here?
Yes. So this is Mackenzie Ellis. Say, hey, Kenzie.
Hey.
She is the daughter of myself and Nettie Mackenzie. She's the second of our two. This is my manager, my timekeeper, my stage manager.
Mackenzie, would you tell us a little bit about your dad?
Yes.
What you gonna tell him about your dad? Am I funny?
Yes.
Yeah.
Does he tell you jokes?
Yeah.
What kind of jokes? Do you tell dad jokes?
Yeah.
What does what do I say when I'm being a minion? What do I say? What do minions say?
King Bob.
King Bob.
You're adorable. You're adorable. Have you seen your dad play characters on stage yet?
No.
No.
Not yet. Maybe this year, huh?
You gonna see me do Mr. Scrooge?
Yeah.
Yeah. You excited about that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here you go. Here.
Thank you, Mackenzie.
Thank you.
You have a lovely voice. Yeah.
Bye.
I'm done. Okay. So speaking of Scrooge, I'm just, you know, I, in the past when I've done a lot of acting, I tried to audition for A Christmas Carol. It was always the traditional Victorian, and I was never cast because I wasn't like a traditional Victorian, you know, playing Belle. So what does it mean for you to play Scrooge? It's a very archetypal character.
It means a great deal to me. So throughout this process, dramaturgically, what we talked about, the novella was written in 1843. 2 years after that, Frederick Douglass was seeking asylum in the UK from the United States. So he was a contemporary with Charles Dickens. Charles Dickens is known for writing about the destitute, the poor, the oppressive state of certain peoples. And I don't believe he was just talking about little white kids in Europe at the time. I think that, you know, this play is set about 10 years or less than 10 years after the abolishment of the slave trade in the UK. As a black man playing Scrooge, that says a lot about where he could possibly be as a businessman, socially, the economics of it all, you know. And so for me, what it means for me to play Scrooge right now is to highlight the fact that it is traditional to have black people in the Victorian era. We were not absent at the time. No, we were definitely present.
Totally.
And although a very small percentage of us, some of us were in positions of power, in positions of influence, should I say. Let me not say power, in positions of influence.
Well, I'm thinking of Queen Charlotte.
Yeah. And so, you know, this is just an example of that Scrooge really doesn't always have to be an old white man or in some cases a white woman. You know, Scrooge can be a young black man, an older black man, a black woman. And there's something interesting about the name Ebenezer. Just in like African-American churches, there's Ebenezer churches, you know, and the name Ebenezer is so, especially in contemporary times, so associated with black Brits of Nigerian ancestry or.
I didn't know that. Is Ebenezer like an actual biblical name or?
That's a good question.
I'm
not sure how often it's used in the Bible, yeah. But I do know that there are particularly African Brits that have the first name as Ebenezer. I don't know of many white men, especially nowadays, and even back in those days, whose first name was Ebenezer. So to then bring it back to Charles Dickens and Frederick Douglass being contemporaries and what he was writing about, who's to say that he actually wasn't writing about young black kids?
Kitty cat.
Hey, time check. Kitty cat time. But yeah, I feel like this role, I think Charles Dickens was doing that subversive thing of really writing about black people, writing about Indian people, writing about people that the UK at the time, which was the global superpower, they were everywhere. And everywhere that they were, brown people, black people, poor people were oppressed. They were destitute. And he saw that as his moral obligation to highlight that. But in the way to get people to buy it, to make a commercial, you put it in the face, in the voice of a white man.
You have done your homework.
A little bit. Just a little bit.
Do you have any favorite lines? I know this is early on still in your rehearsal process, but have you favorite moments yet? Favorite lines?
The scene for me that made me fall in love with this show, that's from an audience perspective and made me want to play Scrooge, is the Belle and Young Scrooge scene. But I feel like, well, it's going out of Fezziwig, which I call the golden years of Scrooge, of Ebenezer, to then the start of Scrooge, of this miserly old man.
Yeah, Belle is and Scrooge. It's very heartbreaking scene.
And especially seeing where he comes from. He comes from this Fezziwig party where he is the most exuberant, the most joyous he has been and will be up until the epilogue. Like, this is him and his height, you know? And then right after that, he has this most crushing blow. He has somebody, because what rang true for me is Scrooge is still, at, you know, later down the line, is very much so in love with Belle. And he didn't want to leave Belle. And the reason that Belle left him was because he got too focused on gain. But the reason that he got so focused on gain is because they were poor. And they had grown up poor. And he didn't want to be poor anymore. And again, me being a black man thinking about the abolition of the slave trade, it's like, I don't want to go back. Obviously, we're not going back to that. So the only way to not go back to that is education and economics. And Scrooge took both of those things to heart. But the things that he let die off was all of these other spiritual, more moral things. So, yeah, so that scene, those two scenes in particular, Fezziwig and Belle, are massively important scenes to who Scrooge is as an individual and his spiritual journey as well.
Well, I'm glad you pointed out that scene, because that scene really is the moment where he could have taken the right path or the wrong path, right? Yeah. I'm just wondering, Charles, what does Christmas Carol say to you on a personal level? And especially as an artist, getting to do a multiracial version of this and gender swapping, I mean, those things maybe 10 years ago were, maybe 20 was starting to happen, but mm-hmm. it really is, to me, like, I'm hoping that people won't even bat an eye over it now.
Yes. I'm hoping that too. And I think we've done such a beautiful job, I'll say, at Portland Playhouse, although in the larger art scene in general, of really making that space. I mean, for us being in the King neighborhood, which I like to say is a historically and presently Black neighborhood, like, it's one of the places you can walk around and actually see people who look like you. And so what it means to me, it's so huge, because when I think about the quote unquote classics, like even when I remember studying Shakespeare and Chekhov and even Charles Dickens, and just never fully identifying with them because I just didn't see myself reflected there. And so for me to be at the helm and to be trusted by the community in this organization to like lead this and bring the vision alive is really huge. And it's also very vulnerable at the same time. And I think I'm really trying to bring my whole heart to it, my whole truth to it, to encourage all of our actors and designers to do that same thing so that we can create a Christmas Carol that really reflects all of us and is of this moment and of this time. So for me, when I think about this show and what it means to me to be doing it right now in this moment, is I've thought a lot about just generosity. And a through line LaTevin and I have talked a lot about is this idea of being able to see and allow yourself to be seen, to allow yourself to be witnessed. And I think as we're talking about ambition and just like our career paths and our families, and it's so easy to get caught up in survival mode, to be honest. And that's really important. And I think the thing that I come back to is that it's important for us to see those around us, both those we do know and those we don't know. And just to take that moment to, whether it's making eye contact or just giving someone a nod or just that opportunity to say, I see you. I may not have an answer yet, but to practice our humanity, because we're all human. And I think that's what resonates so much about this production. And when I think about my responsibility to uphold it, is that very thing, that even though we're doing a very specific and multicultural version of A Christmas Carol, my hope is that no matter who you are, when you come see this, you will be able to relate to somebody or somebodies, or see yourself, or breathe a sigh of relief, or laugh, or cry, or get up and want to sing and dance with us. So I'm hoping that what we are making really is an offering. From the very first song, from the pre-show, just that the experience we're creating is that people walk in and we don't tell them you're welcome here, but they feel it. And then that they're willing to go on this journey with us. I think that's the power of art and storytelling and why we keep doing this show. It's the moneymaker show, but I think it's also that thing where, you know, a lot of characters say it, you know, Fred talks about it, and just the importance of this time of year, whatever your spiritual practice is. I think as humans, we can all learn to practice generosity and grace and witnessing each other just as we are for who we are.
You both came at different time periods as apprentices here at Portland Playhouse. So this must feel like a home to you in many respects. I remember LaTevin, it was like maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more even.
More than that.
Yeah, because I remember, you know, you were like taking tickets and, you know, that's how I first met you. It's like, oh, welcome, you know, come here and sit here, you know.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to you both about what this apprenticeship program means, because I'm sure it gave a lot of opportunities, but there's also the issue of pay equity and all that, you know. So how does that balance for you?
Well, now they don't got to worry about it. It's paid now. It's fully paid. I think the apprenticeship is on a hold right now. But in last two years, it was a fully paid program. But before then, in me and Charles's year, it was unpaid. For me, that wasn't really an issue because it was free housing. Part of the deal was for 10 months, I got a free place to play, a free place to stay.
And to play.
Yeah. I was guaranteed, and they fulfilled their promise of me being a part of three main stage productions. I got to write and perform a solo show, and I got to co-direct Shakespeare production at a middle school. And I thought that was awesome. And that's aside from the classes. That's aside from the networking. That's aside from all of the other stuff that I would get. Those things in and of itself was enough for me to say, yeah, I think I can do this. So as much as we didn't get monetary compensation, what we got for me went much further. I was able to create a theater company because of what I learned.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Is that totally gone now?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're dissolved now. We, you know, life, as you all can hear, you know, I got, you know, mouths
life
to feed.
Happening.
I got life happening and all of my cohorts who helped co-found the company with me.
What was the name again?
Confrontation Theater. Phil Johnson, who is now the executive director over at Coho. Andrea Vinay, who is now running the programs over here at the Portland Playhouse. Tamara Lynn, who is teaching English in Spain.
Is she? Yeah. I miss her.
Yeah. So we're all Elijah Felix, who is in Ghana right now. And then Jasmine Cottrell, who is running, I think, the events over at OMSI. So we're all kind of spread out and doing like amazing things right now. And so we're going to officially dissolve it. But we will still be around, just not in the name of confrontation.
Yeah, it's hard making a living, period, with theater. But being a dad, too, you got to be real serious,
yes.
Right?
Oh, yes, yeah. Very much so.
Charles, what was your experience like as an apprentice? What was that? Like,
I was season 9. So, and you were season 7?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there was a year in between us.
What year was that?
That was 2016, 2017 was season 9. I mean, it's very similar to LaTevin. And in fact, I remember actually talking on the phone to LaTevin when I had auditioned for the program. And Nikki Weaver, one of the co-founders, put me in touch with LaTevin. And so we got to talk about what it was like to be in the city, to be Black people in the city, to be working with Portland Playhouse, the opportunities that were available. And even in that moment, I knew I wanted to work at Portland Playhouse because I was looking at their production history. And so much of it was plays and playwrights that I had known or wanted to work on, like getting to see Terrell Alvin McCraney and August Wilson, of course, Idris Goodwin. Like there were just all these playwrights that I was really excited about, as well as new work. And so for me, similarly, getting the free housing and all of that was such a gift. And I got to understudy. My first role was understudying Victor Mack in How I Learned What I Learned. And I actually got to go on and perform for a student matinee of students from King Elementary School. So for me, it was, I knew that I was maybe going to do grad school. I was trying to figure out my next steps after graduation. And for me, there were so many benefits to doing this program. And more than anything, the networking and connection. Because I moved here and I was like, I'm going to do this 10-month apprenticeship and then I'm going to New York. Peace out. But there was and is such an amazing community here. And I think it's a testament that, you know, LaTevin and I were different years and we've been able to continue to work together, collaborate. Although this is our first official show, me as director and LaTevin as actor. But we've shared so many spaces together as artists, yeah. And particularly as Black artists. I think we really find each other and we hold on and we encourage each other. I mean, Damaris Webb, I remember even, you know, she was offering classes, you know, to Black artists to just train. And there is just this sense of we got each other. We're going to encourage each other. And so the apprenticeship was just such a huge benefit. And then my journey with the Playhouse, wearing a number of hats to now being the producing director and being on the artistic team, I hold and feel that responsibility to make sure that this is a community organization, a community theater, which sometimes gets, you know, sort of negative connotations to that word, but it's true because we are only here because of, right, that generosity of the community. And us, we need to be amazing stewards at that. And so your question about just like pay equity, we're hearing those things and we've been able to turn it into a paid apprenticeship. And so like it is that dialogue and feedback between the community and artists and teachers and makers to say that we're not perfect and we're not going to get everything right, but we're always willing to come to the table and like have a conversation and game plan how we can make those improvements, you know, one day at a time, one season at a time.
So I'm glad to hear that. And I really think that having this kind of a program is one of the things that, from my point of view, has increased inclusion, equity, you know, diversity in theater with faces on stage as well as in the audience.
Yeah.
So from your time coming here, have you seen that landscape change?
So I may be biased, but I'm going to try my best not to be. I think the Portland Playhouse apprenticeship has been the most beneficial thing to the theater industry in Portland that I can think of. Because if you look on stage and behind the scenes, a lot of the leading actors, a lot of the most hired designers were once apprentices. So, you know, a lot of us, you know, from myself to Charles to DJ Curtis to Andrea Vernay to Alex Meyer, Lilo Alfaro. I mean, the list goes on, you know, like we, like the apprenticeship has been responsible for just continuing to buoy this theater industry. And not only that, like make it thrive. I think a lot of people that see these shows and are wild and moved. I think if they look and see, oh, wow, all of y'all were apprentices. What are they doing over there? You know, and for some people, you know, back in the day to say that it's more expensive, it's like, okay, sure, it might be more expensive up front, but if you then look 5 years down the line, you go, oh, wow, we have created an entire army of actors and designers and artisans, you know, that are like really Broadway level, you know, that are ready for whatever the big leagues are. I think the Portland Playhouse Apprenticeship has been pretty much the incubator for that in the city of Portland, for sure.
Wow. Okay. An army. I was going to say a community.
No, I mean, literally, like you know, the Playhouse is, this is season 18, season eight, it's 18 years. And I think there was only one or two seasons where there wasn't an apprenticeship company. So that's, you know, that's at least, let's just kind of, you know, be conservative. That's 15 years of cohorts coming in from all around the world. Because the Playhouse has had people, you know, a part of the apprenticeship from Africa. We've had people a part of the apprenticeship throughout the country as well. And so, you know, you have people coming from all over. And for 15 years, sounds like an army to me. At least a battalion, at least.
Well, it also artists who stayed, like
yes.
you.
Yes, exactly. Because I think it is a testament that so many of us, speaking for myself, the ability to find my own artistic voice and step into that, to step into my power, to step into my truth. And you really form a cohort. So it's like, you know, we bring anywhere from, you know, 5 to 10 apprentices, depending on the year out. And not only are you learning what it is to, like, you know, make a theater and make your own pieces, but you're learning how to collaborate and communicate. Like, you're learning life skills that I think make you go from being a great artist to an excellent artist. And that Portland is so prime for people getting to create and make new work and tell their stories. And there is a desire for that. If you think about the history of Oregon and the history of Portland, I'm hoping that this is not just a blip on the time period of artistic history here, but that we'll start to see and hear many more stories and all the nuances of that. And so I think it's just such a gift. And as I think about the future of the apprenticeship program, I'm really excited to expand it to, like, bring in, like, producing apprentices, casting apprentices, right? So, like, all these behind the scenes things in addition to actors, so that when we think about the ecosystem here in Portland, that we're really making a space to say, we want you here to really make a life here. It's beyond the 10 months. It's not just a transactional thing, but it's actually, please come here and bring your expertise, bring your history, bring the things you have learned from your life and all the many places you lived and the roads you've walked, and put it in the melting pot right here. And let's make, like, a real nice stew. I could be getting hungry right now too, but that's the metaphor.
It is lunchtime. So final thoughts on Christmas Carol.
Oh, final thoughts on Christmas Carol. I think we're going to have a great, amazing time. It's going to be fun. And like I said, there's going to be some new surprises. Please come see LeTevin play Scrooge. Everybody is working so, so, so hard, from the acting, the singing, the musicianship, the collaborative ideas, the nature of it. We have an amazing design team. Dana and Maya are working hard on realizing these costumes, our stage management team. It is a really big production. So I think people are going to have an amazing time seeing a larger-than-life production in a really intimate space. And I'm just really excited for people to go on that journey with us. And I'm really excited to welcome people who have never seen it before, ever, as well as all those who know and love it. So those are my final thoughts on it.
Final thoughts for you, LeTevin?
I think when you come and see this play, you will hear it in a way that you've never heard it before. And I'm excited about that. I'm excited that I think that a lot of the themes, because we love the show, and a lot of themes do get across, but I feel like there'll be some little small moments of, oh, wow, I didn't exactly think about it in that way. I didn't exactly get it in that way. So I'm excited that people will see and hear this story in ways that they never have. And I hope that it will inspire a new love for the novella and a new aha in, oh, wow, Christmas Carol can be done like this? I didn't know.
I think you're going to inspire a lot of young artists who are going, well, what about if we did this to the classics? What if we did this? So I think it'll be passed on. I really do.
So kudos to you both. It's great talking with you. Charles Grant, Letevin Alexander have a great opening. You can find out more info about A Christmas Carol at portlandplayhouse.org. The show runs through December 31st. And you can also get that link and more info as well as this podcast at stageandstudio.org or orartswatch.org. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, D-Man.